Tonight's episode of the Big Planet Comics Podcast is sponsored by Fulcrum Publishing, publisher of District Comics, an unconventional history of Washington, D.C., which was just last week named by the Washington Post to its top 10 graphic novels of 2012. Fulcrum is also publisher of Trickster, Native American Tales, an Eisner Award nominee and winner of the Aesop Prize. Both books would make a great gift for the holiday season, and they're available now at Big Planet Comics. Shakalaka.
Walk, yeah. Walk, walk.
This is episode 66 of the Big Planet Comics Podcast. Woo-hoo. Everybody.
Woo!
Only 600 more to go before we're in trouble.
Indeed. 65 episodes is a lot, or 66 episodes 66. Is even more than that. But anyway, my name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
My name is Jared.
And we're here doing this thing like we always do, or like we sometimes do. We're
on
back
the edge.
Yeah, I think we'll probably have a couple episodes to go, and then we're going to take a little break and get ready for our best of 2012 episode.
Yeah.
Which is going to be crazy. So we're probably going to start rolling out some polls.
Yeah,
so look, you guys can tell us what you think we should be
look for that
at.
Stuff on the Facebook and Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
The Tumblr.
All those things.
Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Separate
too.
As a separate thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what's been going on, you guys?
What's been cracking?
Oh, my gosh.
Do you guys have a good Thanksgiving?
Oh, right. Thanks.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we rock and rolled.
Mine was great. We actually went to a restaurant instead of eating at a house, and they did Thanksgiving brunch. So it was every ridiculous thing you get for Thanksgiving, including like a spread of dessert pies and stuff, plus bacon and home fries and grits and biscuits.
That sounds good
nice.
To me.
So yeah. Much food.
I cooked a turkey.
Wow.
Nice.
And some stuffing.
Nice.
I don't stuff it in the turkey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if anybody does.
It doesn't seem like the right thing to do. I just cook it separately, and it's delicious. And I made some cranberry sauce, homemade cranberry sauce.
Oh, that was really
good. That was
good.
Much better than that wiggly stuff in the jar.
But then it doesn't hold its form as well.
It does not. You can't carve it. And, had some friends over, ate some food, watched a movie, watched Miami Connection.
Oh, was it awesome? I want to see
it. It was awesome. Yeah, I just pre-ordered it on VHS.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
If people don't know what Miami Connection is, it's like this lost movie from the 80s about a band of ninjas,
Karate Kids,
that are rockers by day and ninjas by night.
Yep.
It looks even though awesome. Pretty much exclusively in the movie they ninja by day and rock by night. But that's semantics. What about you, Nick? I'm sure you had the big Greek family.
Yep, we had a big Greek family Thanksgiving.
Excellent.
Not a lot of Greek food, actually. Mostly just turkey. And
where's
the,
your
and
pride?
The usual.
No moussaka?
No. Nope. I didn't make anything, unlike you. I just ate it. And it was really good.
Well, the eating was definitely the best part.
It's true.
Cool. Well, I guess that's it. We got a bunch of stuff to review since we weren't here last week.
Yep.
But let's start with some news like we often do.
All right. So first up in the news, we got Neil Gaiman.
I know that guy.
Neil Gaiman, in the news.
He's in the news.
That's what he does.
So the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund announced that Neil Gaiman and his foundation donated $60,000 to CBLDF for their education program.
Bull boy.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman used to be on the board, right?
Yeah, I believe so. They usually have creators on the board.
Is the CBLDF education fund just like showing people comics that have been banned? Because that would probably educate people more than they want to
know. I wonder if it's like getting banned books in libraries and things like that. I'm not exactly
Maybe
sure.
Maybe some like traveling program explaining to people about it? Because a lot of people don't know how much comics are censored
and
challenged.
Could be many things. We don't know what it is.
Information in our news segment, not here.
Another piece of news, Chad Coleman was cast as Tyrese in the Walking Dead TV show.
And that's Cuddy from The Wire, right? Yeah.
Cuddy from The Wire.
Cuddy.
Just so sweet.
Cuddy was the boxer guy from The Wire.
What?
Yeah. The guy who looks
awesome.
Exactly like Tyrese.
Exactly like
I'm pretty sure Tyrese was drawn after him.
Oh, that's a good point.
Well, there's that guy on the show now who also looks like Tyrese that just is kind of in the background sometimes, like in the governor's town, just hanging out.
So that guy's going to not have a very good story arc.
He's going to get killed by Tyrese.
My doppelganger.
I don't know how much I could say about this, but
uh-oh.
I just wanted to say that I predicted the twist in Amazing Spider-Man 698.
Oh. Yeah, we don't want to spoil much.
We should mention that, though. That's news.
Yeah, but we can't really say what happened, right?
So, oh, 698.
It's been like 2 weeks.
They're going to issue 700 and then restarting with, was it Spectacular? No.
Superior Spider-Man.
So 698 is the beginning of this crazy storyline where the ending is ridiculous. I'll just say that, but yeah. Very exciting.
Yeah, and everybody sold out of it everywhere, including us.
And if you listened to me a few podcasts ago and we actually first talked about Superior Spider-Man, I actually said exactly what happened.
Well, there you go. So we're not going to spoil it, but go back and listen, and then it will be spoiled. Hopefully, if you haven't read it yet, you have a terrible memory.
You'll be retroactively spoiled.
Yeah.
Well done.
Cool. Well, so that's it for news. We got a bunch of viewer mail questions this week. So is that it for news?
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, then let's do it. All right. Up first, we've got a question from Aaron A. Nick just brought this in, and I think I know what this question means. But the question is, what was in the closet in R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet? No, it's what?
I was like, you've come to the right podcast.
R. Kelly?
Bridget the Midget was in there. No, it was definitely R. Kelly. No, what was in the closet after Hawkeye and Wanda slept together?
I had to do some research on this and figure out what they were talking about.
So this was after Wanda Maximoff had said no more mutants, right?
Right, and then she
disappeared.
She disappeared, and then Hawkeye found her.
In the mountains of Latveria
Which I don't even... some Marvel country.
Transia. Where's the Marvel Atlas when we need it?
So I forgot about this, but in the storyline, Hawkeye basically talks to her, and she doesn't remember anything, and he doesn't say anything. And then they sleep together.
Yeah, I remember
that.
What? Yeah, definitely remember that.
Hawkeye, you dog.
And then an issue ends with him, opening this closet, looking horrified, and then closing it and leaving.
But what?
It's never gotten explained.
In, a Pulp Fiction-y, glowing briefcase kind of way.
Was it the Vision's glowing head?
And so I did some research.
Just staring at him.
I did some research in this, and I forgot some of this connected. But in Avengers Children's Crusade, you find out that Scarlet Witch was in Transia, but she was replaced by Doombot.
So Hawkeye slept with a Doombot.
And so Bendis... I forget who it is, but somebody at CBR or somebody always brings up that closet and asks him about it. He just asked him about it when he was talking about All New X-Men, and he's like, just drop it. And so I don't think there is an answer to it. But if I had to guess, I would say
Scarlet Witch's body?
A Doombot, yeah.
Oh, like a second Doombot?
Yeah, or something.
What? The levels of sophistication on Doombots is so beyond what is necessary.
Maybe it was a recharge station.
Oh,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. What? Well, thanks for the question.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Ark of the Covenant to have a safe answer.
There you go. I think
whatever was in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction.
Was in there.
Holy Grail.
But do we know what was in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction?
No.
Is that a thing that people know?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
It's one of those things that people think they know, but.
Yeah. Well, there's your answer. I'm sure there's a whole Wikipedia page, Wanda's Closet or whatever. You go there. It's probably just clothing store, actually. All right, so we got another question.
Okay.
This is from Sam Marks, who's a guy. He listens to heavy metal. I know him. He says, Yo.
What up?
What up? From a reader's perspective, and not the retailer that needs to make the money perspective.
Whoa. Can't separate.
We are scumbags. How do you guys feel about trade paperbacks that end in huge cliffhangers? On one hand, it seems like it's good to make people want more, but what about people looking for self-contained volumes and not an omnibus? Knowing I have to go out and buy more books just to finish a story arc can be discouraging. It has an exclamation point on it.
Uh-huh. You read it like it did.
So. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
The easy answer to that is that there's a lot of standalone trades that you can read.
That is true, but I mean, referring specifically to books that do end in cliffhangers.
Yeah.
What do you guys?
Well, I guess you could say the 12 volume one. Or most volumes of Walking Dead actually end in cliffhangers.
Yeah.
So I think you can look at it from two different points of view. It's like if you're reading The Walking Dead, you kind of already know what you're getting into. You know it's an ongoing story, so it's going to end in cliffhanger. Same thing with something like Why the Last Man, where I think some important things actually happen in that book, right at the end of trade paperbacks.
Right. But I think Why the Last Man's slightly different because that's a closed sequential series. You know it's going to end at some point.
Right.
So it's much more if it's Avengers has a cliffhanger and goes into the next trade and you're like...
Yeah, that's true. But it's these superhero universes now are so... They're so... perpetual. It's everything's always still going.
Right.
The weird thing is, like, a lot of the big
Except
books...
Except for Wanda's Closet.
Yeah, indeed. A lot of the big books will end with cliffhangers, and that's kind of the weird thing.
For, like, the big events, they've been doing that a lot.
Yeah, like Siege, for example, kind of ends on a cliffhanger.
Right, and they're like, there's more coming, but, oh, that... Okay, that is annoying.
Yeah.
I think if they're billing it as, like, a big event book, it should be you pick it up, you catch up, and you're... You know, it can have hints as to what the next big storyline is going to be, but it shouldn't leave it open-ended, I think.
Yeah.
Not that much.
But then that stuff sometimes leads into the best stories, so what are you going to do? It's like Secret Invasion ends, and Norman Osborn becomes, like, the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then you get, like, all that cool Dark Avengers stuff after
that. But I'd say, like, they could set it up, like, that all ties up, and then they, like, have a page or two where it looks like Osborn might become the, you know, it's like setting up, oh, this might happen next, not like, boom, he's the agent, yeah, you're done, you got no more story.
Most of the time it happens that you already know it's an ongoing series. It's not like, I don't know, like, it'll just be, like, a random trade that comes out, and it'll end in a cliffhanger. That hasn't happened too
No, but,
often.
Like, if people, a lot of people come in for Marvel, and they're just like, I need the big stories from the last 3 years, and you just give them Siege, they're going to be like, what? You know?
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while, we'll read something that we don't quite realize is a volume one. Like, say Zeta the Space Girl is a good example of that. Like, Zeta the Space Girl definitely ends on, like, kind of a cliffhanger, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and...
And the second one's even more explicitly.
If you're going into that and you read it, you know, you're like, oh, now I have to wait, like, 2 years for this other book or whatever. Right. I mean, I don't think it was quite that long. But, yeah, so, I mean, I can see where it would be frustrating. Also, you know, most of them have, like, an act that at least closes up in the book.
Yeah, and, like, even that, like, Zeta the Space Girl has, like, you know, the main story that's been happening is wrapped up.
Yeah. And if it has a volume number on the side, you're just, you're on your own on that one. You should know what to expect on that.
But for the most part, for me, if it's something I already like, I'm not too bummed out.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's more? Okay.
Yeah.
I think the only problem, honestly, is that some, especially small publishers, not as much now as it used to be, like, there's never a guarantee that volume two will come out.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so that's kind of a problem, especially, like, back in the self-publishing days when they'd be like, oh, Battle Chasers, whatever, I'm done.
I guess,
you know,
like,
you're like, come on.
Like, who is Jake Ellis is a good example. Because it doesn't really end on a cliffhanger.
No,
I mean, everything's fairly wrapped up. But, you know.
With threads.
Yeah.
They're threads.
That was definitely one of those series where they didn't know if it was going to keep going.
Yeah, true.
Indeed. So, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it's bad. Mostly it's fine.
There you go.
That's how we feel about it. So up next, we get some viewer mail. I mean, some listener voice viewer mail.
What? Real quick.
It happens so rarely. You forget what
someone was talking about this. Maybe you should do it. People could call in live.
Oh, boy.
It'd be a disaster.
You're like, maybe I can make this a logistical nightmare for Kevin.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that would be fun.
That'd be cool.
For
like,
me to figure
we'd
out.
We'd have like our hour podcast, and we say, now, so for some viewer listener mail, and we just wait.
And we just wait for the phone to ring.
50 minutes. We're like, thanks, bye.
Yeah. There we go. Well, we'll definitely try that. Well, I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
But yeah, sure. I'll look into it. Nice. All right. But anyway, we got a question from Aaron M., who's who often sends us text questions.
He does.
But now we get to hear his voice.
What?
Hey guys, this is Aaron M. from Eugene, Oregon. Just calling. First, I'd like to say I love the show. Just had a question for you guys with Amazing Spider-Man 698 coming up today. I'm actually considering buying Spider-Man for first time in 15 years. So I was just wondering, if I wanted to go back, what's your favorite arc of Spider-Man and favorite writer? Thanks again, and love the show.
Thanks for the question, other Aaron that's asking a question this week.
<It's your> Aaron.
And thanks for saying that you like the show. We always like it when people say they like the show.
We should play that every time.
Yeah, forever and ever. All right, so Nick, you're the resident Spider-Man expert. Why don't you tell us what your favorite Spider-Man run is?
Kraven's Last Hunt is always kind of my go-to.
Yeah.
It is the, like, Dark Knight Returns of Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's always really good. And of the recent stuff, I'd probably say the Grim Hunt storyline, which also involves Kraven. It's pretty good because it has good all that character. Gauntlet stuff that leads up to it. I would definitely read that, like all the Gauntlet issues, because there's some great stuff in there, kind of reintroducing a lot of Spider-Man's villains, and then leads up to that Grim Hunt storyline, which is really cool.
So you like Kraven a lot,
yeah.
It seems like.
And anything written by Joe Kelly, all of his Spider-Man stories are really good.
Cool. Yeah. I am a big fan of the Death of Gwen Stacy, Death of the Green Goblin stuff.
That is good stuff.
Spider-Man 121 and 122.
Wait, the Goblin died an issue later?
Yeah, the next issue.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Spoiler if you haven't read it yet.
Sorry, kids.
But yeah, he kills Gwen Stacy, or Spider-Man kills Gwen Stacy, right. Depending on how you look
He's
at it.
He's involved in her death.
Yeah, and then the next issue, Spider-Man fights him, and he basically kills himself. He dies the same way that he dies in the movie. He's impaled by his own glider.
Bomber.
And dies.
And never comes back.
And Norman Osborn is never seen again. Did we talk about this recently? I didn't realize that Gwen Stacy and Harry Osborn don't show up until Spider-Man is in college.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I forgot.
I did
They're
not
so know. Integral to like his story, but
yeah, I just think about them being in high school. I don't know if I'm brainwashed by the movies and stuff.
Yeah,
but,
and like when Mary Jane shows up, it's even after that. Like he's gone through like several girlfriends. Like Peter Parker didn't even have girlfriends, and he's got like two. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Like his girlfriend in high school was like Betty Brant, and he was in love with like Liz. What's her face?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
West.
Liz Lemon.
Yeah, Liz Lemon. Blurg. And I also love the Eric Larson Spider-Man comics. As dumb as they are, they just came out when I was a kid. And
those are great, man.
Yeah, they're a lot of
Don't
fun.
Hate.
Yeah, and who wrote that? David Michelin wrote those. And the other stuff I was talking about, the death of Gwen Stacy, was Jerry Conway and Gil Kane.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Good stuff.
I like from the most recent stuff, the Crime and Punisher series. Really good.
That's so good.
Who drew that one? Is that
Paolo Rivera.
Oh, my God. There you go. We're going to the Daredevil
and
dudes.
And I think it was written by Mark Guggenheim.
I think so.
I think that's right.
But yeah, just like, because there's so many like street level heroes in the Marvel Universe that are really good, but like Spider-Man and Punisher are like such opposite sides of the coin, but they play really well off of each other. So and that was also hilarious. I mean, like,
well, at the storyline of that,
yeah,
just that somebody is stealing. Like, basically, Peter Parker decides he wants to become a cab driver.
Yep.
And but at the same time, somebody is killing cabbies and stealing their like
medallions.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And Punisher is checking that out,
so
they have to work together, and it's pretty funny stuff.
Yes.
Cool. Well, hopefully that answers your question about Spider-Man stuff.
Spider-Man related.
But
things.
Also, just if you really want to read some stuff, go back and read the first. The first Ditko
just
issues.
Get the start at the beginning. They're amazing.
It's like I think it's 38 issues that he wrote, and they all take place in real time. They take place over 3 years in real time, which is kind of crazy.
True.
Yeah, he goes from being a
high school to
like a junior in high school to like his first year of college at Empire State University.
Imperial State,
yeah.
and it's awesome stuff.
They're still some of my favorites of all time.
But that's not it. We still have more questions. Thanks again for your question. And we got a question from Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Phil Coulson. No, Phil Slingerland. He says,
Agent Phil.
Over the weekend, and a lot of these questions are like, hey, since it's the day that Spider-Man 698 came out, but we didn't do an episode. So this is over the 2 weekends ago.
Yep.
I had a brief conversation with Kevin, which is me, you guys, about music and comics. But recently I've been thinking a lot about music with comics. In my experience, the music that I'm listening to while reading can have a huge impact on how I interpret a comic. Have any of you guys experienced this as well?
Yeah, like when I read a lot of Morrison comics, I go into the room from Lost where it's just like jungle music and like strobe lights the whole time. It just gets me in the mood really well.
You listen to Jim Morrison.
Yep.
Is there any stuff that you guys listen to though when you're reading comics?
Sometimes I just put on, like, I'm really good at like treating music as background noise, so it's just I'll put it on and won't really think about it too much.
Yeah, not too often. So. I try not to listen to music. It kind of always distracts me.
Yeah.
Just in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way I am. Jared said he can put that in the background, but when I listen to music, it like engages me too much.
Yeah.
It's funny because when I'm going to sleep, I can watch TV and fall right asleep. But if I listen to music, I can't fall asleep at all because I just listen to it.
Good thing there's no music on TV.
Although when we play role playing games, which happens every once in a while, I like to put on, if we're playing D&D, Lord of the Rings music.
That's so
and
good.
When we play the Marvel role playing game, we listen to the Avengers soundtrack by Alan Silvestri. And it's pretty dorky, but it's pretty fun. And then he said, also considering how much music is used in movies and television to manipulate viewers, I would be surprised if comic creators didn't take advantage of this too. Do you know of any comics that have recommended soundtracks?
Yes.
Thanks, Phil.
God, what was it? Is Phonogram one of those ones that has like.
Oh.
This is
Phonogram talked a lot about, there's so much reference to music just in conversation in that. I don't know if it actually is like part of the comic.
There's
experience.
Some comic that either that at the end of every issue they would say, listen,
Phonogram had that at the end of their issue.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but not like went in the trade. I don't think they did that, you know. That was more just like, hey, reader, if you're interested in more.
No, there's one that was like, this issue music by blah blah blah.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. Was it Young Liars? Young Liars. Yeah,
there
Young Liars by David Lapham Latham.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, that had it. Blue Monday definitely is a comic that had recommended.
Yeah, that was
listening.
I think the early trend when they were like all these kind of hipster people
just,
doing comics
just go with
and they'd
Young
be
Liars.
In the blurb.
Both of those are great. They're, they're
Young
both
Liars
great.
Is the best.
But, V for Vendetta, if you want to have a nice sideways comics experience with Alan Moore writing a song for you. That's a rough chapter of that comic.
And then also, just slightly different, but kind of the same, Like a Velvet Glove, Cast in Iron, the
what?
Dan Clowes comic, actually for a while they were offering a 10-inch record that had a soundtrack that you were meant to listen to while you were reading the comic.
Oh, and Red Rocket 7, the Alred comic about like aliens in a rock band came with, like the deluxe version had their album that you could listen to.
And also, if you read the children's comic Road to Oz while you're listening to Dark Side of the Moon.
You have to start on the second panel right when it cues up, though.
The only time I ever listen to music when I'm reading comics is if I'm reading, like, romance comics. I like to put on some Barry White. So,
you listen to some R. Kelly.
Yeah.
I put on Superfly.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the questions, everybody. Yeah. If you have questions, you can send those questions to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com. Or you can call our hotline at 1-703-539-CAST. That's 1-703-539-CAST.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's all that stuff.
That's
now,
a lot of stuff.
That is a lot of stuff. But let's do some reviews. Yeah?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, yep. Let's do it.
We love comics, they're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
Up the first of this week, we've got...
What the?
Sorry.
Italian?
It's a me, Kevin. We've got Captain America number one by Rick Remender and John Romita Jr.
Captain America.
Oh, yeah, that song.
Yeah.
America.
Oh, okay, so just back to music and comics
oh,
again.
Oh, most important.
If you ever get the urge, it's the full album is on YouTube. There's this album called The Marvel World of Icarus.
It's so good.
And it's just songs. About
fantastic.
I believe on our first or second episode at the end we played the Silver Surfer song from that album.
Nice.
Which is great. Much better than the like Joe Satriani Silver Surfer album.
That's true.
But Captain America number one.
Yeah, it's a comic. It's awesome. this is Rick Remender's Captain America taking on the huge responsibility of following up Ed Brubaker's
filling the big red boots of Ed Brubaker.
Yeah. Indeed.
And he goes in the completely opposite direction. Ed Brubaker's run is all kind of noirish and
thriller espionage.
And this is bonkers sci-fi action nonstop. It's so good.
Well, not nonstop, because it does start with a little look into Steve Rogers' childhood, which I don't think we've seen before.
Yeah, it was. You just never even think about it. Just like scrawny kid, and you have no idea about his background and how did he get this personality to be so Captain America-ish.
Yeah, and it works well, kind of building up like what this issue like, because it cuts from him getting like basically abused by his father, sort of, to
abusive childhood,
being like this. You know, brave hero riding a rocket
and fighting the funniest villain I think I've seen in a long time.
The Green Skull,
basically an eco-terrorist version of the Red Skull.
Yeah, so good. So I mean, this whole issue is about centers around Captain America fighting Green Skull and ending up teleported to a different dimension where crazy things start happening. And and from what I hear from Rick Remender, when we were talking the other day over coffee, I think it's like 12, the first 12 issues of this are in, take place in Dimension Z. So
that's interesting, because that kind of potentially mirrors what's going to be happening in Fantastic Four as well, where it seems like they're going
to
be gone for
so maybe they
for
were trying
quite a few issues.
To really mix up the Marvel Universe and say, like, what would it be like if a lot of the like kind of B-level guys had to step up?
Or writing stories where it's just like, hey, you can just read this Captain America story and you don't have
do
to
do whatever
read
you want.
Else.
Or they're like, Heroes Return was such a good idea, let's do it again.
Yeah, Captain America's going to have huge Rob Liefeld boobs in the next issue.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about this John Romita Jr. art in this.
We can do that.
Is it the coloring? It's kind of like more watery colored. It's just...
It's so good.
I think it looks a lot better. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to figure out what's different about it.
Romina's really up and down. So I feel like he's obviously done tons of great stuff. His work on Spider-Man was usually pretty solid. I love his stuff in Kick-Ass. But then, like, you know, some of the stuff on the Avengers felt really rushed.
Yeah.
And I was looking. The stuff in Kick-Ass is actually inked by somebody different than Klaus Janson. Which is why I think I like that better. It just looks a little tighter. But this is actually inked by Klaus Janson. But something about the finishes on it just gives it a more, like it just feels like a little more three-dimensional or something.
Yeah.
It just looks really good. The coloring is really great. And
Action scenes are so, that's one thing that Romita's always been really good at is action sequences.
Yeah, I think that's
true.
There
are a lot of them,
and you know, and some of the sort of FX stuff after actually works, which can sometimes be annoying. Works well with his art, like blurring effects,
the blurring
and stuff,
speed
like that.
Line it, stuff. Yeah.
A lot of it gives it like a sense of depth that I think sometimes his art doesn't have. Yeah, so I actually thought that the art in this was pretty great.
Yeah, and he's got the classic Jack Kirby blocky style.
Yeah.
that kind of gives it an old school feeling,
and like some of the weird like technology and like traps and stuff.
The thing about this is just so fun. It's so good.
Yeah, and this definitely seems more influenced by the Jack Kirby era of Captain America. Right. Like it just seems more like crazy.
Yeah.
Like that stuff.
And like just looking at this again, one thing I'm noticing, there are a lot of sound effects in this, which is kind of a trend that was dying out of comics for a while.
Right. That's true, but maybe we'll get some thought balloons pretty soon.
I miss thought balloons.
But overall, awesome. Yeah, I mean it was a fun issue.
And it's crazy ending.
You know, a lot to live up to after Brubaker left. But I think this is off to a pretty good start.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So up next we got a new Image book. This is Clone number one. This is written by David Schulner, who's a TV writer. He wrote for Desperate Housewives and Everwood. What is Everwood?
Everwood was the one about the preacher. It was like a CW show.
Oh, boy.
Like his family.
wait, no, that's Seventh Heaven, right?
it was like... it was the one with Treat Williams, Everwood.
Oh, okay.
Or something.
I don't remember that one. And he also wrote for The Event, which is like...
Most importantly.
Yeah, which is like Lost or Flash Forward. It's like the same show.
But basically. Not as good as not any of them.
Yeah. Nick gave me notes this week, so we know about some of these writers.
I got notes because I'm
number one researcher.
There were so many books this week where I was like, who is this dude?
Yeah, so, the art in this is by Juan Jose Reap, who drew Black Summer and other one.
No Hero.
No Hero, and the new issue of something... What did he draw this week?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Where I was really surprised.
Oh, God. I forget what it is. It'll come back to me.
All right. Well, Jared, why don't you tell people about Clone, and I'll try to remember what it was.
So Clone is basically this guy.
Talon.
Yes. What? Yes, it was Talon.
He drew Talon this week.
Really?
Yeah, Guillaume March. Hopefully we'll be back on that book.
Crazy.
But Reap's art was, like, insane on that comic. It looked like Seth Fisher or something. It was really weird. Anyway.
All right, so there's this guy named Luke who's a security guard or something out at Los Alamos. Woof. and his wife is pregnant, and they're getting their first kid. And things go really, really crazy when a clone of himself shows up.
Whoa, spoiler.
Sorry.
When it's like page four.
Title of himself shows up bleeding to death, having been shot in his kitchen. And basically starts wrapping up that they're either... you know, mirror universe or clones or something, and for some reason they're after him or trying to kill him or kidnap his wife, and it's basically like intense nonstop action thriller with
he's like
weird...
one of us is coming to kill us,
right,
or something like that,
and then there are just like more of him show up,
and then other people who are teamed up with some of the other clones, or some of the clones are good, and there's just more people getting shot and more
people clones in this comic.
Yeah, so a lot of driving and crashing and bleeding.
But I thought this comic was pretty rad.
It's awesome.
Like, the first time I read it, I wasn't sure if I liked it. But then,
your clone read it to you.
yeah. Then I cloned a copy and read it again.
There you go.
I read it last week, and, like, when we were talking about the podcast, I was like, I don't remember. Because, you know, it was Thanksgiving, and I was reading a lot of comics. And then I went back and read it, and it's actually pretty solid. It feels like a TV show.
Yeah,
honestly,
it definitely it definitely has a like pacing similar to the kind of like what you get in a lot of pilots these days, where it's just like
with concepts and twists, and
but also trying to keep everything like moving along and action packed.
Yeah, and it's got one of those scenes that always shows up in a like an action TV show, where somebody's like driving in their car, like really fast, talking on their cell phone, like "Get out of the house! Get out of the house!"
And,
like,
it's like,
yeah, you almost expect like numbers to appear on the page, right, like, right. Like 5 o'clock.
Jung. Yeah,
yeah. It's the whole thing's pretty nuts. Reap's art is. Like, he's such a weird artist.
Yeah.
I don't even know how you describe it. I mean, he's very similar to, like, Jeff Darrow or something like
that. That's what I always go to. But this is kind of more away from Darrow in this one, I'd say.
Yeah. I actually, this was not my favorite art by him.
Yeah.
There was something a little, like too dirty about everything or something. I don't know. Like, everybody has weird lines on their face and stuff. But it's definitely not bad. It's just nuts. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, people make really funny faces sometimes.
Somebody told me they didn't want to get it because of his art.
Well, it's definitely like you either like his art or you don't like his art. I can definitely see why some people wouldn't. But I think it's definitely a comic worth taking a look at.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And he's good. The one thing is he's good at drawing faces, so... You kind of get, you know, you get the when the other clone shows up, you're like, hey, it's the same guy.
Yeah, it's not like reading. True. Yeah, it's not like reading. Yeah, because everybody doesn't look exactly the same. Yeah. It's not like if you were reading like a Greg Land comic or something, and like a guy shows up and you're like, oh, it's a clone of Tony Stark, and they're like, no, it's just a different character with a slightly different goatee,
right,
or true. like a George Perez comic where everybody is just like has their mouth slightly agape and they all look exactly the same with different haircuts, but the men and the women. Yeah, but I thought this was cool. I'm interested
writing,
to see where it's going.
Sure.
It's interesting that it's an image book. It seems more like an Avatar book or something.
A little bit, yeah.
But that's probably just because of the artist.
Yeah, I think the art.
Yeah. But overall, pretty interesting. But probably not the best image book we're going to review this week.
No,
nope. There's some good image books.
Yeah. So up next, we've got Comeback Number One.
Snap.
It's written by Ed Brisson, who wrote Sky Pirates and Neoterra, which actually I'm not a big fan of that comic.
Nah.
And he also wrote some Avril Lavigne comics. I'm assuming that means Make Five Wishes or whatever the Avril Lavigne
comic. Two of them?
There were two. There were at least two volumes.
What, wasn't there another? I don't even
know. He wrote both of whatever they were.
Yeah, it was called Make Five Wishes, I'm pretty sure.
I was like, oh, good. And I didn't write it on there, but he also wrote some a crime anthology.
The artist from this, Michael Walsh, also did art in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the art in this was pretty solid. It definitely was like crime book art.
It was a little close to Chris Samney-ish.
Yeah, I would say that. And definitely maybe shades of like Sean Phillips and Michael Lark and all those guys who draw crime books now. Like, what's his name? Southtree or whatever. The guy draws Stumptown. I don't think that's the right name.
Southtree? I don't know.
Yeah.
Hollingsworth?
So, Jared, you like crime books.
I do.
Tell us about this.
I can't. I've read too many comics today.
All right. Well,
give me a refresher on this one.
Comeback is it's a strange book. So the way it starts, we're sold out, so we don't actually have copies to flip through while we're talking about it here.
Trigger my memory.
But the basic premise of Comeback is that there's a group of people who can, for a large amount of money,
yes, this one's awesome.
like go back in time and save your wife from being in a car crash, or save your husband from being murdered in a home invasion, or just like save people.
Right.
And so,
but there are two twists to it. That basically, this isn't explicitly stated, but it's implied that there might be a time limit, so they can only go back a certain amount of time. And that they can't make it look too different. So it's like if someone dies in a car crash, they're like, we'll go back the day before and basically, you know, tell her not to do it and often kidnap her so she's not in the car. But then they have to make the car crash and have a body in it.
Right.
So they're trying to like recreate the actual event for all other people while saving someone's life and jumping them into the future.
Insane sums of money.
Yes. Yeah. There's like $25 million for a deposit and then we'll talk about it. So,
and also some other crazy stuff happens. Like there's a guy... who it seems like he's avoiding death, so they bring him into the future, but he hadn't told them that he had cancer.
Yep.
And so when they get there, basically all the stuff metastasizes like super fast and
he explodes.
It's really gross.
Yes.
And so I mean, I guess that's kind of the basic. They're just like setting stuff up in this.
Yeah, because a lot of it's like the supporting cast of like who are these guys who are doing it. You know, there's obviously like the office dudes who are running it, and then the like guys who have to go back and set up all these terrible scenarios. Yeah. And one of them's like thinking about quitting, and yet something's obviously going wrong with him. And there's obviously the stress of doing time jumps is not good for people.
Yeah,
who do
that's
it often.
What it seems like.
And one of the, like they all have kind of shady things going on.
Yes.
It definitely feels like a crime noir book with time travel.
Rather than a sci-fi book, it's much more, kind of gritty and, like, dark things happening.
Yeah, sort of similar to, there was a book called, or a movie called Time Crimes that came out. Do you guys remember that movie?
God, that movie's so
good.
With
Jean-Claude Van Damme?
No, that's Time Cop. He solves time crimes. No, this movie was like, it was Spanish. It was like El Timino Crimino or something like that.
That movie,
that's exactly
that movie's so good.
It's a great movie. Really? And something about the tone of this kind of reminded me of that a little bit.
It's probably one of the best time traveling movies ever.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, that and Primer. If we're talking about time traveling movies right now, Primer is a great movie.
Oh, Primer is good.
Time Bandits is, of course, great too.
Yeah, but it's not really about time travel.
Time Bandits? Well, it's definitely really about time travel.
Yeah, but they go to like magical worlds and stuff.
But they travel through time a lot too. So Comeback's really cool. I'd say if you like comics.
If you like cool things.
Yeah, if you like Criminal and Fatale and
if you want those with a twist.
Yeah, like with a sci-fi twist, I think that this is pretty interesting. All right, up next we've got FF number 1 by Matt Fraction, who's now running the
everything.
Fantastic Four line.
Yes.
Wrote Fantastic Four, which we reviewed in the last episode. And Mike Allred, who most people probably know from Madman and...
Ecstatics
and the aforementioned Red Rocket 7 and some crazy Mormon comics that he wrote as well. He's never finished, I guess.
Nope.
Sadly. Yeah, I actually really like those. And this is spinning directly out of the events of Fantastic Four number 1.
Fantastic Four. So these are like very closely linked, but this is the split point of like they basically say in the front thing that basically Mr. Fantastic is going to take the Fantastic Four out on a voyage. So what about the supporting cast? That's literally the intro on the first page. So the Future Foundation and like all the kind of gang of children and hangers-on that they now have as the supporting cast of Fantastic Four. Mr. Fantastic starts going around to the adults and like saying, we need people to like, you know, we're not going to be gone for long. Haha, we'll see about that. But we need people to basically run the Fantastic Four Foundation and the team while we're gone.
Yeah, for the 4 minutes that we're supposedly going to be gone.
That's the thing that's kind of like,
be gone for 4 minutes.
Kind of spoils the whole thing. They're like, we're going to be gone for back in 4 minutes after we left. But in case something goes wrong, like the fact that this book exists is like, you know, obviously something's going to go wrong.
No, they're going to come back in 4 minutes and be like, nope.
Yeah, yeah.
It's taken over.
And then it'll just go back to being the same way it was.
Yeah. Next issue is the last issue, yeah.
That would be amazing.
Each issue in the next 4 issues takes place over 1 minute.
Yeah. Wow, that'd be amazing. I could do it, too.
I don't think it would be that amazing.
I could do it.
So a lot of this is just about them kind of... gathering up these replacements.
Yeah, each one is tasked with like bringing in a replacement.
Yeah,
basically find like someone to suitably fill their role, which is pretty interesting.
Just quickly before we start talking about all this, do not spoil the Johnny Storm joke, just because it's so funny and it's so much funnier if you read it in the comic.
Oh, the part, yeah.
It's like it made me laugh out loud. But so basically, like Reed Richards is like contacts Scott Lang, who's Ant-Man, and it's interesting why he wants him to come in, because it seems like feels like it would kind of be therapy for him to work with these kids, because his daughter died, and then. There's She-Hulk's also in it, contacted by the Thing, and their stuff is pretty funny. Yeah. Like it takes place in like a boxing training facility or whatever, and it's pretty great. And then Johnny Storm basically just asks his girlfriend to do it.
It's so funny. He's like, amazing. He just basically picks his girlfriend and puts her in like a Thing costume.
Yeah. and then Sue goes to see the Inhumans, and that stuff's great. To see Mike Allred draw the Inhumans just awesome. And this whole issue was just a lot of fun. It was like, it was a lot of setup, but I'm glad they did it all in one issue.
That was the one problem I had with it, is it's like, there's a lot of setup in this. There's so many characters to introduce that almost every page is like introducing a new character and like giving you kind of a rundown of who they are and what they do.
But
giving
helps.
Each character a page like that, or sometimes groups of characters, themed characters as it will, I think it fit pretty well.
It just kind of made me feel a little bit like next issue will be like the first issue, because this is like... Because the main characters aren't even really in it that much. Like, She-Hulk's on like 2 pages.
It to me feels like Straczynski's run on Thor, except in one issue instead of like 6 issues. I felt like it moved along pretty fast though, and there's enough humor in the book that it was still a lot of fun to read, and the art's great, the coloring is great too. I'm assuming that Laura Allred colored it as she usually does with his stuff. Yeah, and I thought it was a lot of fun. And but it definitely feels almost like a number zero issue or something like
right.
that.
Right.
But if you're interested in it, don't wait for the next issue because it's still like a really fun
issue. It's really funny and really quirky. And I just judging by the characters involved and some of the future issues I've kind of seen pop up, I think it'll be really, really bonkers.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on it. We'll let you guys know how it goes. Because so far, so good on most of this Marvel Now stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But up next, we've got a not Marvel. I feel like we're talking about Marvel so much this episode. So
it's the revenge from exactly about a year ago.
Yeah, exactly.
DC dominated.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to someone who's like, I listened to your podcast when you guys started and then stopped because I don't read all those DC books. So I'm like, no, we talk about other things.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was 52 books. But yes. I think we might have skipped a couple.
No, we did all of them.
We did everyone.
Boy.
Last week was a little blurry, but we did it.
So up next, we've got a new book from Arkea. This is called Grand Duke. This is written by Jan, who I he did some Spirou.
What else has he done, Nick?
He did some Spirou comics.
There you go.
Cool.
That's all I can find.
And the artist Romain Hugo, I guess, mostly does pinup art and comics involving planes and women.
So this is the perfect book for him to draw.
It definitely is. So this is a like a reprint of, I guess, what is it, four European albums
put into a single book.
About, it's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet story, a little bit about like a Russian Night Witch.
The Night Witches.
Which, if you've ever read Battlefields by Darth Ennis, is basically
the Night Witches story.
It's basically the same story, and then like a Luftwaffe pilot.
Yeah, so basically, this is right in 43 when Germany's kind of its most advanced into Russia, and things are starting to turn around and go really badly for the Germans. The Soviets had put together a female corps of pilots who were kind of more scouts and weren't given any good planes. So they're literally flying like World War One biplanes and nonsense. And yeah, it's kind of a star-crossed lovers thing of this female Soviet and this male German pilot. Of course, to make him good, he's anti-Nazi or very like, I'm here to fight the war and I don't care about politics. Ha ha, I'm anti-Nazi. Whatever.
Right, which
like,
just
like they always
more
do.
Makes him seem like a bonehead than anything.
Yeah, well, I guess that's why a lot of Germans had problems. But anyway, so yeah, it's just over these four books. So basically four storyline chapters in this thing. There's a lot of plane crashes, a lot of people getting shot out of the sky, some politics.
One of the weirdest things that when I started reading this is like I don't remember reading too many books that are from German perspectives.
True.
During like they're not like evil right away. They're not like just, you know, they're not like they're like real people, you know, which probably a lot of them were.
but they're definitely for us. They're the bad guys so often.
Yeah. So they're always almost portrayed as like every single German is like evil.
Yeah.
Like. And during World War II, but like, yeah, they're just portrayed as normal people.
I think that's pretty accurate.
But no, like,
even, well, I mean, obviously,
even for this, the Nazis were like political and stuff. It really stays away from like the kind of like, you know, awful, barbarous Holocaust stuff. This is very much like soldiers in a war. Much
yeah,
less
like,
well, and it's just rooted because I feel like the main character kind of states that in a way that like I think that the author was probably trying to as well, where he was like, you know, he doesn't paint a swastika on the side of his plane because
true.
He's like that is a sign of
a political
of this party, political
not,
party
a
not of not of the German
stuff.
Military.
Yeah,
right.
And then actually gets in a lot of trouble for that too as well. But I think that you were talking about there's a lot of planes exploding and stuff. I feel like that's where this book is at its best.
Yeah, there's
I feel
some
like
great air battles. It's amazing.
I feel like the romance stuff and like some of the character stuff is not as interesting to me as some of the.
It's a little forced in some ways.
Maybe the translation's a little weird too.
The translation, there are definitely a few really rough spots in the translation for me. I know we talk about translations a lot on here, but you know, when a book's coming over like that, it's like there's a weird thing. It's like there's a part where they're talking to each other and she's like, I know you found me by following my footsteps in the snow, but that doesn't mean you can walk all over me. Which I'm sure is like a translation of
like
some
very
like
clever pun or something.
Yeah, but like just makes no sense and makes her sound like a crazy person.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of brutality in this. A
lot of boobs.
And on the flip side, a lot of boobs. Yeah. Since it's a European comic, they definitely do not flinch from showing nudity. And this guy loves drawing the boobs and loves drawing the planes.
Yeah,
and
it's
works
a little
out pretty well.
It is a little weird though because you know it's I feel like on one side they're like, you know, these women pilots are, you know, just as good as these male pilots.
Right.
But then they're like, but also, like, let's check out their bodies. It's a little bit demeaning and
good
weird
point.
And kind of takes away from that a little bit. I mean, he's great at drawing women. You know, it's really good at drawing women. It's very obvious that he more lovingly renders the women in these comics than the men. And he seems to be interested in having sex with planes as well. But,
indeed.
And all that stuff is drawn really well. That was just like one little thing that seemed a little weird to
me. Especially considering how much, like, violence towards women are in this thing and how badly they're treated in general.
But all the technical stuff is drawn. There's a part where they show like a cockpit of one of these planes, and it's like so detailed, it's insane.
And these are a lot of like, they're flying a lot of experimental planes and stuff. So even people who like planes, you may see stuff you've never seen before, and looks fantastic.
I feel like I was more intrigued by this book than liked it. This is
a book where if Jared came into the store, I'd be like, hey, Jared, you should buy this book because I know you love this stuff.
If you like World War II stuff, it's cool. I like the especially if you, I feel like it's really accurate. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm just talking.
But I feel like it's certainly not the first thing I would recommend to somebody. Like if somebody came in there like, what's a good book about World War II? I'd be like, well, Moving Pictures by Catherine and Stuart Immonen. Like that's to me is like a really emotional, great book about World War II. But, you know,
but if you're like into like the military aspect of it, this is pretty cool.
I'd probably recommend some Garth Ennis stuff.
Yeah, no, you like the techno thriller stuff. This is the techno side of it. Because interesting, like we said, Garth Ennis did his Night Witches story. That is like, I think, even more brutal and more realistic about how things would have been. So I think the forced romance or the romance in this may seem a little forced.
It's the romance. It's the whole thing's like slightly romanticized, I feel like.
I think that's a good way of putting it,
But still an interesting book worth flipping through. And you know, it's
amazing.
Yeah, it's always good to see European stuff.
I feel like pinup stuff, definitely right up your alley.
Yeah. All right, and then back to the Marvel books. We've got Indestructible Hulk number one up next. This is written by Mark Waid, who's been writing Daredevil, and of course has wrote a bunch of other stuff like Kingdom Come. And he wrote Kingdom Come, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was kidding.
I always think it's Kurt Busiek, but he wrote Marvels, right? And then Mark Waid's also been writing the amazing Rocketeer Cargo of Doom, which is fantastic.
So good.
And art in this by Lionel Francis Yu, who drew Secret Invasion and Silent Dragon.
Some
Wolverine stuff, yeah. This
book was incredible.
It was indestructible.
It was indestructible.
I tried. I smashed it up.
This is kind of actually the weird thing is it kind of not really, but ties to events in Avengers Assemble, where, you know, Bruce Banner like hates Tony Stark.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a through line, but through these books for sure.
Yeah, and it's kind of like closer to the movie Bruce Banner a little bit. He's kind of like smart guy, but he just wants people to leave him alone. But in this, it seems like he's finally decided that he might as well. He's never going to cure the Hulk, so he might as well use the Hulk. And so he's like, I want to work for S.H.I.E.L.D. And so that's the gist of this.
Yeah, basically he goes to S.H.I.E.L.D. and he's like, I feel like I could do a lot of good for the world, but I don't have the facilities. I don't have the resources to do that. So if you can build me labs and you know, fund my research, basically I'll work for you as an operative. I can be like a giant green nuclear bomb for you to
use as a
weapon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's a good point what Nick says. I feel like they're trying to get Hulk closer to the movie Hulk, because at the end of Avengers, basically he can control the transformation, and I think that's kind of where they're wanting to get to with this as well.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of shifts towards the movie and comics recently.
Black Nick Fury.
Good point. But no, the thing I thought was most interesting about this is you kind of forget that Banner's a scientist. He's been so dominated by the Hulk and like the emotional trauma from that you don't. I mean, he's always on the run and all that nonsense that you forget he's one of the super smart guys running around the Marvel universe. So I really like that he was playing up that, like, I can do a lot of smart things and good things. And the twist that, you know, he's so angry about Stark and, you know, how he's always constantly, I don't know, outthought.
Yeah, he's like, I'm smarter than Tony
Stark. Exactly. I thought that was awesome. Yeah. And I think there'll be a good mix of him doing some crazy science stuff.
Yeah, and so that's how it starts out, and then it just goes into, like, Hulk punching stuff and exploding stuff, and it's fun. It's fun. The art's great. Mark Waid is really good at injecting humor into his stories, and I feel like there's a lot of that in this.
Yeah.
And there was a moment in this where I was just like, All right, this is like over the top comics. Like I like basically the Mad Thinker is in it, and he's like, you know, he's like one of the smartest guys, and he's like the Hulk's about to fight him, and he's like, you think you can defeat me? Like I can calculate your power and defeat you. And then he like tries to do it, and he's like, his power is incalculable. And I just thought that was like an awesome, stupid, cheesy moment that I love to
call
get
the incalculable.
The incalculable Hulk. It's so easy to say. Yeah. But definitely if you like Daredevil and the stuff Mark Waid's been doing, I think this is definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. So good.
Cool. All right. We got some more comics this week. There's definitely
let's go. Let's go.
Yeah. Up next we got Leroy and Popo. This is a comic by Louis Roscosh, I'm gonna say is how you say that name. That's probably not right. But this is published by Nobrow and is part of a new line that they're doing, a sort of subline called Cereal Box. And they're going to do serialized graphic novels. And I think this is the first book in that line. And it's pretty awesome.
This is right up your alley, Kevin.
This is definitely right up my alley. So Leroy and Popo are just a couple of dudes that like to hang out and play Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword on Wii.
This book punched me in the face.
Oh. Did you liked it, I assume.
Oh, yeah. So brutal, though.
It's so fun. So they're just kind of like two friends that hang out with each other. And they like to go to this coffee shop. And Leroy's in love with this girl who works there,
barista.
Yeah, she's the barista there, and he like kind of tries to hit on her a little bit, and you know he's kind of a goofy guy, and so he decides to try to get in shape by playing Wii Sports, and actually. The story of this is so weird.
It's bizarre. Yeah,
yeah. I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah, because that's the story.
It's a very simple story, and not a lot happens. But it's basically he's in love with her. Things go wrong, and that's all I'm really going to say about that.
He's trying to impress the girl.
Trying to impress her, and things go terrible.
Yeah, and it's it's kind of about finding friendship where you can and things like that. And it's a really well done book. But I guess what more we should talk about is like the way it's told instead of what's in it. And it's like,
the main character is a bear.
The main character is a bear. The other guy's a weasel. Maybe?
I think he's a snake.
Is he a snake?
He's got a weird horn on his nose. I don't know.
He may also be a dragon because the part where Leroy draws himself riding a dragon, Popo's like, I'm in this picture. So
he's like a lizard of some sort.
Well played.
But, the art is not like any other art I've seen and really hard to explain, but it's really colorful in the way that a lot of, Nobrow books are. And the pacing's just like very lazy, but in a good way.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It just feels.
It's kind of like how their life is. It fits very well.
Yeah, like they're kind of just like, I think neither of them have jobs and they just kind of hang out and
coasting.
Play video games. Yeah. And I don't know, there's some really fun sequences. There's a part where they're both on Facebook chatting with each other, which is like super accurate.
I will say that.
Did you see the Facebook page though, listing their friends?
They had like two friends.
Yeah, like. That's why I really like this, but this was like emotionally wrenching. These are not winners, and they get kicked a lot while they're down.
And that's definitely true.
But one of the best parts of this book is when the bear is Leroy, right?
Yeah.
He shows up and he's like, I just found this gem at the local game shop.
Oh, it's Superman 64.
Yeah. I never knew there was a Superman game for N64. It has to be awesome, right?
Yeah, and Superman 64 is notoriously like one of the worst video games of all time, where you basically just fly through rings. And then if you make it through that, there's a part where you just try to pick up a car, but it's almost impossible to do. And then you smash your Nintendo.
There's an accurate picture of it with Superman standing in front of a bunch of rings and Lex Luthor going, Superman, now you must solve my maze.
So funny. It's Superman 64 is a terrible game, but this is an awesome comic
and a game.
Yeah, and
I was so invested in these guys; it was amazing.
Yeah, and exciting to see that it's just the first volume of potentially many. So definitely check this book out. All right, what do we got left? We got two more comics. First, we've got Nowhere Men. This is really funny. Actually, usually we have a bunch of comics in front of us, but we sold out of. Like all these new Image books. Yeah. So Nowhere Men, we may be a little vague when we talk about it.
That will be less because of us not having copy and more because this is a weird book.
Yeah, it's like a lot. There's a lot going on in this book, so it's a little hard to explain. But this is written by the Image publisher, Eric Stevenson.
Yep.
And the artist is Nate Bellegarde, who drew Brit Hackslash and the Invincible Adam and Eve book.
There you go.
And who's going to try to explain what Nowhere Man is about?
I got it.
Because at first it's about the scientist beetles.
Yes. So basically, if the Fantastic Four was all super scientists, so you got like the four super really smart scientists together, and they're like, we're going to get together, we're going to work together, we're going to change the world. So it's a very like kind
of
futurist thing, and then they have a nice little bio section where they have like profiles of these great scientists and stuff. And then it jumps, and I assume it's much later, and suddenly we're in an underground lab where there's a bunch of scientists who are working on crazy projects, but the main problem is that all of them have been infected with some sort of mutating plague that is giving everyone different, like, mutations, basically, most of which seem to be killing people or doing really, really bad things to them.
They say it's non-fatal.
All right, so everyone's turning into really weird things or, like, growing things or just going insane for a lot of them just because they can't handle it or it's doing weird things to their brains. And then it starts to become apparent that if they cannot solve this plague, they're going to be locked in this facility and not let out until they all die.
They're in an indefinite quarantine in this thing.
Yes.
And meanwhile, what is also going on is, like, it seems like as time has passed, these four guys who used to be really good friends and are scientists have sort of diverged, like their sort of opinions of what you need to do to better the world.
Yeah.
And as a result, they're not only locked in there by themselves, it seems like there's also like a giant killer monster that is locked in a room in the facility that they're in as well.
Right.
And that is something that will probably be important later on, I assume.
Right. The implication is that they've created an unkillable giant gorilla.
Yeah, basically. And that's pretty much all that happened.
And then there's a little twist at the end just to kind of kick it up a notch that everyone's boned, and it's kind of awesome. This was very compelling for being as kind of weird as it was.
And the art. So,
yeah, it was kind of a book that while I was reading it, I was like, I don't know what I think about this. And then when I was done with it, like sort of taking it in as a whole, I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And the art was good. I don't know what it reminded me of. I feel like I've seen this guy's art before. Well, I read Invincible Adam and Eve, so I guess I have seen his art before.
He's got like a little bit of that Ryan Otley style, but a little more...
As exaggerated.
Yeah, there you go.
There's almost like a little bit of Riley Rossmo mixed in there or something like that too.
More European.
Yeah, like. but the art's great and it definitely suits the story really well. He's really good, like Otley or like Corey Walker, like drawing expressions and stuff like that, and which helps in this book because it's a lot of people reacting to each other in conversations, but still somehow is very engaging as well.
Yeah, and so, you get a good little slice of everybody's kind of personality in this, and
they're all pretty interesting, cool characters. They all got their own little quirks, but
yeah, definitely good
interactions
has their
with
own
each other, and some back history, and
so hopefully what we'll get in the future is like sort of showing how they got to where they are now, mixed with like what's going on, and
they had like a bio section, like an interview at the end with one of the scientists. I feel like this is one where they put a lot of thought into the character, so I'm hoping it'll pay off. Like, but it's reassuring that they've done that. So,
Yeah, it's a good book. Definitely worth checking out. I think of the three Image books that we talk about this week, probably the most intriguing.
But
Image is doing good stuff right now, especially like on the sci-fi side of things.
Yeah.
Like between this and
Comeback and Saga and Profit
and just everything. And Massive, which isn't actually an Image book, but it might as well be.
Multiple
Warheads this week was bananas. But
so good.
Speaking of books that are bananas.
No.
We got one more book this week, but it's by one of at least my favorite creators.
I
think
agree.
All of us. This is Remake Extra, spelled with a three.
Remake Extra.
This is by Lamar Abrams, who I'm a huge fan of. He's a super awesome guy.
To increase his street cred, he's a DC born kid.
He is. He's from around here. Let's see. How do you describe Remake? Okay, so basically Remake is the story of a character called Max Guy. And Max Guy is basically Astro Boy or Mega Man if Astro Boy or Mega Man just like to sit around and read Astro Boy comics and play Mega Man video games instead of actually being Astro Boy or Mega Man.
Right.
But then every once in a while, he'll get kind of drawn into an adventure as well. And this is broken up into three different stories. The first, which you think initially is going to be a story about Max Guy, but... ends up just being a story about his cool friend Cardigan, who, by the way,
my favorite,
dresses exactly like Lamar Abrams.
I know, it's hilarious.
It's basically a story about Cardigan going out with a couple fine ladies and going to the Black Cat, which is a local club here, and listening to some DJs that play Space Jams, but not Space Jams from the movie Space Jam.
It's true.
And then the second story in this is about Max Guy. basically fighting like an evil ice queen. Ice queen
or
who's
super villain or...
who's making it snow. And so he gets really mad at her. And then they have like a really crazy thing.
Battle.
And her name's Black Ice, and she's pretty awesome.
No,
she's
that, so that cool. whole joke about Black Ice.
The Black Ice thing is really funny. Black Ice is dangerous.
So good.
And then the final story in here is about Max Guy being repaired by the woman that created him. Yeah. And it's just really funny as well.
And kind of touching at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Her sort of the Dr. Light or what have you of Max Guy is this... you think is like an old man, but she's just wearing like Groucho Marx glasses, which is really funny. But this book is great. I love all the remake books, but I think that this is probably the best one.
Very accurate drawing of the Black Cat.
It's true.
Yeah, it's still awesome.
It's hard to explain like why it's great. I mean, that's sounds great.
It's just
but...
so casually funny, and there's a lot of kind of puns going on and.
Yeah, like there's a part where, for example, there's a part where a girl gets hit by a car, and as she's dying, she's like texting
as
her
friend.
As
she's being flung through the air to die, she's texting every event that's happening.
And she's like, "See you guys in heaven." Or there's a part where Max and his friends are playing a video game, and basically, people in the game are like, "Max, you have to come into the video game world and save us, or we're gonna die." And he's like, "Nah, this story isn't really about me." And they're like, "Okay, I guess we'll go die now."
yeah,
it's like stuff like that. Or in the last story, the thing with the jetpack, which I don't want to give away, but it's so funny.
Good.
Just goofy gags.
Cardigan's so cool.
Cardigan's a cool guy. Well, you know, he's Lamar basically. I think Lamar even has that Ultraman helmet.
Nice.
but remake was great, and that's about that.
That's awesome.
I think that's it for this episode too.
Yep.
You guys, a lot of comics.
Yes, a lot of questions. A lot of talking.
There's definitely a lot of that. All right, so we will see you guys next week.
All right,
later.